Hey, this is Joel Widmer from Flex Digital Marketing, and I have a very special guest today with me. His name is Steven Zralik. Steven, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joel. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Definitely. This is one of my first interviews, and I know this is your first time with Skype, but I really love talking with people, you know, and hearing more about what they do. And when I heard what you did, which I'll let you talk about here in a second, I couldn't pass up the opportunity because I knew that it's extremely important for anybody who's not only in marketing, but in just business in general and online, but it's huge. So tell us a little bit about what you do and, you know, the company that you work for.
Sure. I appreciate it. So I'm a lawyer and my focus is on helping advise clients, whether they're entrepreneurs or regular brick and mortar businesses, social media companies, digital companies, startups, or just creative individuals or creative businesses. And I help these clients avoid disputes, and then once they're in dispute, I help them resolve those disputes. And my work, I'm in my 15th year of practice. My work for about the past 8 has focused on intellectual property issues, and those range from copyrights to trademarks to, you know, protecting your reputation, to trade secrets. And it's really evolved into social media as the technology has evolved and become more widespread. And that's been very exciting to see. I work for a firm in Nashville called Bone McAllister Norton. We have about 30 lawyers. We're a full-service business firm. And I think my favorite part is being able to collaborate with my partners and to help our clients achieve their objectives and make the right connections with other people, whether they're investors, if we can help make that introduction, or government officials. That's exciting to see.
Very cool. What I wanted to talk a bit today is just about some things that people need to start thinking about if they're not thinking about the legal side. I know for a lot of people, the legal side may not be the sexiest side of business, but it is hugely, hugely important, and it's something that we can't avoid. So I just wanted to hopefully get some good stuff out of you to share with people what they need to know when they're bringing their company online, or if they've been online and they're using social media, you know, what are the things that they need to be aware of? So first off, what should small businesses know on the legal side when they get into social media? What are some things that they need to keep in mind?
Okay, good question. You know, I think just sort of as you're thinking about, you know, the folks that you work with, Joel, and the folks that I work with, some of them are very sophisticated. You know, their entire business model is on a social media platform. Plenty of others, they are active in terms of using it for marketing, and others are still just beginning to dip their toe in the water. And I think it's important to communicate the message to the CEOs of these companies that social media is not a fad. It's here to stay, and that these companies and these individuals, that if you are not participating actively in social media, then somebody else is participating for you. And by that I mean that you really need to protect your reputation, and the best way to do that is to have an active presence in social media. If you're just leaving it up to other people to talk about your business, then you're not having any input in how that conversation is going. So that's the first overarching thought that I've got for folks, that this is here to stay and you need to participate and be active.
Definitely. Yeah. That's great.
And I'm happy to sort of run through like some other top areas, but interrupt me at any time, and I'd rather keep the questions going, okay?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think as businesses use social media, and they do more than just tweet about it, but when they actively invite other people to participate with them, and that's what makes it so social, right? But when they invite other people to participate, you know, we talk about that as user-generated content. So it's no longer that the business is controlling the entire message. They're also, they have contests, they have games, they actively invite people to use a hashtag on Twitter and talk about their product. And when you're doing this, when you sort of loosen up on your control over the content. I think that it's really important for businesses, especially, or those who are blogging, to really look out for two important things: defamation and copyright infringement. There's others also. But, for example, if I host a contest and I invite members of the public to talk about my product or my services and to make a video to talk about my product through this video, and the people who create the video and then they post it to my website, let's say they infringe on somebody else's copyright. Well, I can be in trouble for that. I can be held liable for copyright infringement as the host of that, unless I take some specific steps. And what I want to give your listeners is a very easy shield against claims of copyright infringement when they invite other people, members of the public, to comment on their website, when they invite them to post material that may be protected by copyright. Very easy steps, and this is just sort of a no-brainer that people need to think about. So this is one of the two shields that I'm going to talk about. This is the DMCA shield, and it stands for the Digital Millennial Copyright Act. And DMCA, it's a mouthful, so we'll just keep it at that. Here's three easy steps. First of all, have a DMCA policy on your website in your terms and conditions. Second, designate a DMCA agent and tell the Copyright Office of the United States who that person is. All that means, it could be you, it could be anybody. If you're the CEO of your business, if you're a one-man shop, it could be your lawyer. It just tells the world, this is my person. In case anybody thinks that there's been copyright infringement, this is who you contact. And then the DMCA agent will be in charge of monitoring that, investigating that, taking down anything that may be allegedly infringing, and asking the person who posted it to respond. And that's called a takedown procedure. That's a little bit too much detail for now. The third other major step is this. If somebody is posting on your site and they have committed copyright infringement and they do it more than once, then you need to permanently ban them. If you don't follow those three easy steps, then you miss the benefit of this shield that protects you from having to pay money damages. You might still be ordered to take it down from a court, but you won't be responsible for money damages, okay? That's an easy giveaway. The second major shield that I advise clients on is creating the shield against things like defamation. And this is the CDA, the Communications Decency Act. Section 230 of the CDA provides a similar shield for things like defamation when it's posted by somebody other than yourself. So you've got a website, you invite users to participate, and they say something terrible about somebody else, they defame them. And defamation, by the way, I'll define that really fast. A simple explanation of that is that it's when you say something that is untrue about another person that casts them in a negative light.
Gotcha.
And not just negative, but, you know, you call them a thief, lots of other things. But anything other than opinion. If you're saying something that is a fact about someone or a business or something that casts them in a negative light and it's untrue, then you can be held liable for defamation. And there's obviously tons of opportunities for people to defame other people online anonymously, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the shield here is very simple. Two parts. Don't create the content that is defamatory, and don't direct the content. Okay, so if you've got a contest out there that encourages others to defame other people, you can be held liable. If you don't do either one of those things, if you aren't creating this content and you're not directing it, then you have an absolute shield against liability for things like defamation online.
That is huge. I didn't know a lot of that stuff. Give us an example of, I want to make sure that I am understanding this as clearly as I can, but with the DMCA shield, protecting it against copyright infringement, right?
Right.
So an example of that would be, of copyright infringement would be, so I hold a contest on my blog, and it's for user-generated contest where I have people submit, say, a video.
Okay.
And in someone's video, they use some kind of copyrighted content. It might be a sound clip, or it might be a design or a logo or something like that, and they don't give whoever credit, I could be held responsible for that.
Yeah, and let me clarify that. So,
okay.
Good question. And I just clarifying that a little bit. Typically, a logo is protected by trademark, not by copyright.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is if you invite anybody from the public to post anything, whether it's a contest or not a contest, but to post anything on your blog, to post anything on your website, on your Facebook page, about your product. Let's take Ford Explorer for a second. They've
mm-hmm.
done an amazing job of inviting the public to comment on the new Ford Explorer, right?
Yes, they have.
And let's say that you know, these aren't even contests. They just want people who buy the new Ford Explorer, they are proud of it and they want to post it, and they show themselves out on the ski slope, they show themselves in some riverbed using this and showing how versatile it is. And if they are playing a song in the background that belongs to U2 or to any musician, and they don't have the right to use that song, that would be copyright infringement. If they are showing a photograph by Ansel Adams and they don't have permission from Ansel Adams or his estate, that would be copyright infringement. If they show a movie in the background in their movie that belongs to somebody else, that would be likely copyright infringement. Okay. And so I think that makes me think of just sort of a broader topic that I should touch on. I think everybody is so used to getting information for free on the internet
mm-hmm.
that we often forget that this thing called copyright exists. and it's easy to forget. But unless it is in the public domain, like a song that is really, really old, let's say Happy Birthday is in the public domain, right? But otherwise, works of any original expression is protected by copyright, whether it's registered with the Copyright Office or not. So if you draw something, if you write a poem, if you write a blog entry, that is protected by copyright, and you have the exclusive right to reproduce it, to make derivatives from it, to sell it, to publish it. You alone have that right. And whenever you're going to be putting up content, whenever you put a song on the background of your website, you need to get permission. Same with any other form of creative content.
There's so many different questions I want to ask, but I want to make sure to get to everything that we have to
yeah.
get to. Those simple steps of, I thought was really important, that very first step of just making sure that you have somebody appointed over this. Doesn't matter if it's you, if you're a one-man shop, or it's your CEO, or it is a lawyer, but you just need to have someone registered. And where do people go to do that?
They can go to copyright.gov,
awesome.
So the Copyright Office. And if they just type in DMCA in the search box, it'll pop up. I think there's a one-time fee of $100 or something like that. It's very easy to fill out. And if people have questions, they can call me about that. And then, yeah, the second step is having a policy on your website. There are great examples out there. And if people need specific help, they should call their lawyer. And the third thing for people to remember is to just make sure that you permanently ban repeat offenders. And if you do those three steps, the fourth one I didn't mention, this is a given, but it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one is that you receive no direct material compensation, or what the law calls consideration, in exchange for the infringement. So if I'm making money because of the video that you're posting and it's infringing on somebody else's song, then that would be a problem. So you have to make sure that you're posting this, you're not getting direct money from that infringer.
Gotcha.
And Joel, let me give one footnote, and I know you want to keep this.
No, this is really good.
Okay. The footnote to all of this, and this is sort of the converse of copyright infringement. In the examples I gave earlier, I said that would be copyright infringement if you post some sort of video on your website and I'm using a U2 song in the background without
mm-hmm.
the permission. The flip side is that there's this thing called fair use. And fair use in the law, it, for example, if I'm using just a small segment of a song, if I'm not using it for a commercial purpose, if I'm not making money off of it, if I'm using it for a nonprofit, if my use of it doesn't significantly impact the marketplace for the original song, and if I'm somehow transforming this, those are all factors that courts consider when they're trying to determine, is it a fair use or is it an infringement? And the transformative portion, and that's a legal term, have I transformed it? Have I either poked fun at it critically, like parody? Have I criticized it somehow? There was a really great case. The author of a book, she lives in Nashville, Alice Randall. The book is called The Wind Done Gone, and it's a parody on Gone with the Wind. And the estate of the author of Gone with the Wind filed a lawsuit, and this was taken up to the court right under the U.S. Supreme Court. And they sued for copyright infringement, and Alice Randall ultimately won. She said that her characterization of the original characters of Gone with the Wind, and she cast them in a bad light. She had a rape in there by a plantation owner of one of the slaves. And, of course, the estate of the original authors, they hated that. And Alice Randall was able to say, look, I'm using this, and I'm being critical of it. I'm using the original content, and I'm updating it. I'm twisting it. And the court ultimately sided with her. So that's just an example of how it's not cut and dry. In general, people need to be careful about using other people's creative content without their permission. That's just a good general rule.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say it's black and white. There are times where you can get away with it.
Gotcha.
Under the law and do it legally, you know?
Yes, definitely. And if I'm hearing you correctly, she did make fun of it. She cast it in a critical light, but it wasn't, like you said, defamatory. It wasn't, if that's even a word, is that a word?
That's totally a word.
Okay,
yeah.
Awesome. She wasn't going out there and purposely slandering the name. She was doing it more of a parody, like SNL would do to all the current news.
Yeah, and let me clarify that too. Hers was not really a parody. I mean, I guess it was a parody. Hers wasn't meant to be funny at all, unlike Saturday Night Live. Hers was meant to be a modern day, with the knowledge that we have now, with the cultural
stuff
that we have now. She was taking a fresh look at the characters and the story and the plot of Gone with the Wind. And with our modern sensitivities today about race and culture and sexism and racism, looking at the original characters and plot and saying, you know, what really went on in the Old South? And I'm going to give you my perspective, and I'm going to tell a new story. I'm going to tell that story from a different perspective.
Hmm.
And the court said, you weren't just copying that material without permission. You were recasting it in a new light, and you were criticizing it. And there are many factors that go into it. We could spend a whole podcast just on fair use, which would be fascinating. But I'm just sort of giving an example and an overview of that.
Very cool. This is hugely fascinating to me, and I am definitely not someone who's ever been, you know, paid attention in law class or, you know, but this is really interesting stuff. So I hear about these new laws being passed specifically relating to things like social media, you know, online. It seems that there's a new one every week. I'm looking at kind of the future and seeing these trends happening of, at first, you know, the government passes all these laws for offline, you know, print material and even video stuff. But now that we are moving online and you're saying, yeah, people like on YouTube, there's probably more of them are probably copyright infringement than not. But what do you see happening in the future with all these laws being passed? Do you think it'll get overly restrictive, or do you think the government will even be able to keep up with all this new content and stuff going on?
Well, you raised some really good points. You know, technology is always ahead of the curve compared to the law. The law takes a little while for the law to catch up, and that's what the law is trying to do. And of course, the technology is changing every day. I am not aware of new laws being passed every day. I'm aware of sort of the courts applying the law, and it's being applied every day, and so we're getting new results from courts, and
this there, is just there you go. That makes whole, yeah, that's a much better way to say it.
No, but you were onto it, and we're really just at the tip of the iceberg there. I will tell you, like, the laws that I do see that are, and I know we've just got a few minutes left, so.
Oh, you're good. Keep,
okay,
please.
The laws that we see really what's coming around the bend are going to come from Congress, and they're going to deal with privacy issues, okay? They're going to deal with tracking and how companies and developers, digital developers, app developers, how they monetize, how they make money from tracking internet usage, okay? So if I've got an app and I offer it for free and people get on there and I can follow their location and I can follow their purchases, their spending habits, and then I can sell that and make money off of that, I assume that that practice will continue. But right now, the way it's set up is that there's nothing that requires that app developer, that app owner, to tell me what information they're collecting and what they're not collecting. Okay, and so there's a movement afoot in Congress, and I think to many people's satisfaction, to many people's happiness, that you're going to have the ability to opt out more prominently than you've got right now. Right now, you can go into the terms and conditions, the terms of use. You can look very far down the page into the fine print, and you can say, I want to opt out. In Europe, there's a much bigger movement to make it easier that you opt out automatically, and the only way that these companies and designers can collect the information is if you affirmatively opt in.
Wow.
And I don't think that's gonna be the case in the U.S. I think in the U.S. we're gonna see an opt-out option, but it's gonna be a very easy opt-out option. I don't think we're gonna go quite as far as Europe, and that's a whole other conversation about why. but stay tuned for that, because I think that we will definitely see something from Congress this fall on that.
Awesome.
The other sort of like the major areas that I see, and you know, if you wanna talk in more depth some other time about any of these topics, I'd love to, but the other major areas that I see that are important for businesses or for people that are moving more online into social media are issues of endorsements, marketing to children, employment issues, and sort of realizing that anything online or in social media can be used in a lawsuit against you or against your opponent. So real fast, you know, just covering those four or five issues.
Please.
A bullet on each one of them. Here's what I hope that your listeners will take away. When it comes to endorsements, the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, it regulates endorsements, it regulates a lot of advertising, and it makes sure that there's a truth in advertising component. That's at the federal level. At the state level, each state's attorney general also does this. Most of them have a consumer protection wing or a consumer protection arm. But when it comes to endorsements on social media, if you are asking for anybody to endorse your product or your services and you're paying them something, whether you're paying them money, whether you're giving them free product or discounts, you have to disclose that connection. You have to disclose what you're giving them in exchange for their endorsement. And right here in Nashville, in our backyard, there was a company that was fined $250,000 by the FTC, and that's a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot more money than a lot of small businesses make over a long period of time. And this company was selling online guitar lessons, and they were giving away some sort of bonus to those people that gave a good endorsement, whose endorsement then drove traffic to the site. And they didn't disclose that they were giving away this bonus structure. And that's just a good example of you know, not one of the country's five biggest cities, and the FTC is still giving away really significant fines. So be careful in that area.
Wow.
When it comes to marketing to children, there is a law called COPPA, C-O-P-P-A, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And that's a federal law, and it says that if you market to children under 13 years of age, if you are online and you collect personal information about them, you have to get their parental permission. And there was a company called Playdom, Playdom, Playdom.com, and just either in May or June of 2011, so just very recently, the FTC fined them $3 million because they were marketing to children. They had collected information on these children from over 400,000 of these kids without parental consent. Just easy things like their name, their age, their address, the programs they like to play. You're not allowed to collect that information without parental consent. And the FTC, there's talk of the FTC moving that age up, bumping it up to anybody under 18 years of age. And I think lots of companies probably market to kids between 13 and 17. You know, there's probably a smaller segment that markets under 13.
But I bet it's growing rapidly.
It's growing rapidly. And the other thing that I want to just point out here is that Playdom, in its terms of use, had this magic language that I'm sure they thought would protect them and shield them from all liability. The language said, we don't market to anybody under 13 years of age. And I think that was probably what they and lots of other companies around the country do to say, hey, you're entering this at your own risk. We're not marketing to you specifically. And the federal government said, you might be saying that, but you're doing something else. And the practical, what's happening in the real world is that even though you're saying you're not marketing to them, you really are. And that's a significant fine, and people need to pay attention to that.
Yeah, that is huge. Fantastic example.
And then the last two things that I want to talk about, just the employment issues and use of social media in evidence in court. On the employment issue, it's important for every business to update their employment handbook, to update their employee policies, to include something about social media. And the bottom line is this. You can get as elaborate as you want to. The bottom line is that you want your employees to use good judgment. You want them to use common sense. You want them to say things that don't put the company in a negative light. The flip side of the coin, and this is what companies have been getting into trouble with recently, is that employers have very little ability to restrict speech of employees on social media. You can restrict the time of day when they use it, while they're at work, they're not allowed to use it. Of course, you're going to have some employees whose entire job responsibility and job description is to be your social media person. But for everybody else, you really cannot limit what they do in their off time or their personal time. And employees have the right, even in a non-union environment, even in a private employment setting, they have the right to talk about work conditions. And there's a governmental body called the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, which we think of typically as regulating unions and companies with unions. But lately they've been venturing outside of unions into just private employers. And recently, my favorite example, this was earlier in June of 2011. They have gone after, they filed a complaint against a BMW distributorship, a dealer. They were launching a new model, and they were having a party for their regular customers. And they had some hot dogs and some water from a discount store, from Sam's Club. And one of the sales reps went home later that day and put up his opinion about the event on Facebook. And he said, you know, it's kind of lousy that we're this luxury car brand and we're giving away discount hot dogs and water. And, you know, what gives? And the BMW dealership fired him, and the NLRB has gone after the dealership to say, look, that employee had the right to talk about workplace conditions. Typically, we think of those as salary or whether your boss is being good to you or not.
Mm-hmm.
This shows how far the NLRB is taking it. into talking about hot dogs and bottled water. So I think it's important for employers, anybody who has employees that is using social media, to know that you've really got to be careful in restricting the free speech of your employees, and at the same time, encourage them to use good judgment.
That totally covered another question I had to you about companies creating social media policies. And, I mean, it really all can be boiled down into, you know, use good judgment, think before you type. And, it's also largely determined by the quality of employees that you hire.
Exactly.
With how much hot water you get yourself into.
Exactly.
So that is something every company should be thinking about, and not just thinking about doing before they get heavy or, you know, they even start social media.
Yeah, for sure. And that's easy to do. And any lawyer ought to be able to, any lawyer that does employment law or deals with those issues or social media issues can easily just retrofit or update that policy. The last thing that the one that I'll leave you with is just the idea that social media can be used in court. And courts, you know, I think that all of us like to think we've got this right to privacy. And everybody knows or should know that at work, if you're using technology that belongs to your company, or if you're using it while you're at work, then what you say on social media is not private, and it doesn't belong to you. Oftentimes, your employer has the right to look at what you're doing, to monitor it at any time, whether they tell you that they're doing it or not. But even more than that, there really is no such thing as a private comment when it comes to social media. If you put something out on Twitter or you direct message something to somebody, anybody else can see that. And if you want to have a private conversation, pick up the phone or go see somebody in person. But when you put it out there on social media, anyone can see it. And opposing counsel, if you're involved in a lawsuit, if you break a leg and you sue somebody for your broken leg, your opponent can look on your Facebook page and see that you've been out, you know, playing volleyball or running in a half marathon, and that your leg must not be hurting you that much. And they can use that in court. And in the past, people have tried to shield that and say, look, that's my private information, that's what I do in my off time. And courts are saying, we disagree with you. If you put it out there for the world to see on Facebook, on YouTube, then, and if you are suing over that, if you're suing over your broken leg, if you're suing over your employee departing with your trade secrets, then you've made that an issue, and your activity on social media is now fair game.
It kind of goes back to what a teacher had always said, and that is just don't put in writing what you don't want the world to see.
Good advice.
I don't want this to scare listeners into, you know, this could be held against me or whatever. I think it's more of you just need to be educated and know that these pathetic excuses of this is mine or I didn't want you to read that, even though it's public, you know, information on the internet, just don't work. You know, they really never have. And I think it's great that, you know, now more than ever, people have to take responsibility for their actions.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is something that I'm seeing a lot in my cases, dealing with anonymous online defamation and protecting your reputation, that people think that they can post things online and remain anonymous, and that's just not true. If you defame somebody, for example, anonymously, the person who you have defamed can find your identity. They can file a lawsuit, they can get a subpoena from the court, they can order Comcast or Charter or your internet service provider to turn over your identity. And unless that person who defamed you has a really good lawyer and a really good excuse, that court is going to disclose their information to you. So people need to know that this does not have to be scary, like you said, Joel. They just need to be educated. And my goal in working with clients, and when I give talks about these topics, is just to let people know sort of these are the parameters, and here's where you can get into hot water, and here's how you can stay safe and protect yourself. And if you keep just some of these principles in mind in general, then there is so much opportunity with social media, both for marketing your business, yourselves, and also from just a new revenue stream source that you can create so much new stuff with digital and with applications. You shouldn't be afraid of this. You just need to know what it is and be careful.
Great advice. Stephen, thank you so much. This has been so insightful for me, and I know a lot of other people will find it useful.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Joel. Thank you very much for inviting me to be part of this.
Yeah, and please tell us where we can find you online. I know you have a fantastic blog. Tell us what the address to that is.
Okay, I appreciate that. Honestly, I tweet a whole lot more than
okay.
I follow. Twitter is just my name, Stephen, Stephen, Zralek, Zralek, all one word. And then my blog, and I try to get on there a couple times a month, and I do blog about issues of social media, sort of the legal issues that people need to follow, and also about entrepreneurship and about Nashville. Those are the three things I talk about. And my blog is called TheExpressive.com, TheExpressive.com.
Awesome. So Twitter is probably the best way if people have maybe a question or maybe about something you said in here or just want to connect and follow. That's probably the best way to get a hold of you.
Yeah, that would be great. And that's where I link to a lot of interesting legal issues that are going on. So that's probably the best way to just stay current.
Very cool. Well, Stephen, again, thank you so much. And there's a million things I would love to talk about further, so we'll definitely have to have you on again.
I would love to. That would be great, Joel.
Awesome. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Talk to you later.